Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Morning, ye. You all right? Hope you are. Genuinely hope you are. What, me? Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Cheers. Thanks for asking. It is 8 in the a.m. British summer time on Thursday, the 23rd of July in the year of our Lord, 2026. You're the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. You know who you are. You guys know who you are. You don't need to be told. Come on now. The best people on earth. Tune in to the Bo Show live. Brilliant. What more could a boy ask for? As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, I'm all good.
The omnipresent, disembodied voice of the producer there. Okay, what's the legacy corporate lamestream media banging on about this morning? What are they lying to us about by omission, if nothing else? What are they trying to pretend is important or not? Let's have a look. Let's stop faffing about. Let's just get straight into it. Okay. Row over early prison release. That's still the big story. That's the biggest story Fleet Street have decided to go with this morning. It's all over the front pages. And Gary's back of the net tax. That's Gary Lineker. Weirdo idiot Gary Lineker. Tottenham Hotspur and England football legend Gary Lineker, who thinks he knows about anything other than football. Who told Gary Lineker that he's qualified to talk about anything other than football? Who told him that? Doesn't know what he's talking about, does he? About anything. Okay, well, Gary Lineker, as a millionaire, multimillionaire, of course. He was obviously paid handsomely as a football player. Not as much star these days. But also was one of the highest paying BBC TV anchors for a while, wasn't he? So he's got millions of quid. He said, oh no, tax us harder, daddy. Mr. Burnham, please tax me harder. Dear the Labour Party, dear parlour room pinkos, socialist wannabes, please tax me harder, daddy. That's what Gary Lineker says. What a buffoon. A complete buffoon. We'll get into it. Today's one of those days where probably most of the main stories, most interesting stories, aren't actually on the front pages. Sometimes it happens, right? Sometimes, often, like yesterday, the main stories are on the front pages in that news cycle, or at least in the morning time of that day. And other days, for whatever reason, stuff happened too late last night for it to get onto the front pages, or Fleet Street just decided to not really go with it. And a lot of the more interesting stories today, I think, aren't actually on the front pages. Maybe I'll whip through the front pages a little quicker than usual, quicker than yesterday. And we'll look at some other stories. Because they nearly all go with the prison row thing. We talked about that yesterday, didn't we? That, in general, the general story is, isn't it, that the Labour Party are just letting out loads of more people from prison early, sometimes including killers, paedophiles, rapists, because they say the prisons are full. We could stop importing hundreds of thousands of new people every single year, year on year. Could do that. Could build more prisons. No, just let criminals out early. And then laugh about it. Remember that? We talked about that yesterday, didn't we? I believe. If not, just quickly to recap. Wes Streeting and Shabana Mahmood and a couple of others were caught on hot mic laughing. Maniacally cackling, I would characterise it as, at the prospect of loads of prisoners being let out early. And one of those, well, two of the people that may be let out early were those two young kids. I think they were only 17 at the time, were part of the incident that dragged a cop along the road, killing him horribly, horribly. They only got 13 years for that, and they may well be let out after six because of this. And Andy Burnham, his widow, says it's just deplorable or despicable or something. And Andy Burnham says he'll look at all the new cases, he'll look at that policy. That's what nearly all the front pages go with. All right, let's whip through it then. The Guardian. The Guardian. What's that stench? It smells like fetid bog water. Oh, yeah, that's The Guardian. That's what that stench is, The Guardian. Okay. Burnham steps in to order a review in row over early prisoner release. See? France had 5,700 excess deaths in June heatwave. Yeah, that is always what happened. You know, it's one of those things, every single year without fail, around autumn time or into winter, lots and lots of people, usually older people, usually people that are already terribly infirmed, will die, will get the flu and die of the flu. It's the same with heatwaves. Usually it's very, very old people, people that are already at death's door for whatever other reason. The heat wave tips them over the edge, so it's too much for their system. So when you see news like that, you see stories, numbers like that, like, what, 5,700 perfectly healthy people died of, what, like heat stroke? No, that's not really what happened. Some might have, but the vast majority of that will be people that are already very, very nearly dead. It's horrible to say, but okay. Every year that will happen. Right. A little story there, a bit odd. Well, not odd, but lobbyist pays for flattering news pieces. It's just a little story that there was some sort of lobbying company that was founded by David Cameron and Boris Johnson, and that it paid journalists to write flattering pieces about it. Story as old as time. Well, not as old as time. That's very sort of a common thing, though, really. You're rich and powerful and you know people in the print media. I mean, Boris Johnson, both of those gentlemen are very plugged in with the news and print media and journalists. Very, very plugged in. I mean, well, you're having dinner with them at White's, a gentleman's club or something, a hotel, and just say, or even to their boss, just say, oh, don't suppose you could do us a favour, old boy. Don't suppose you could write, or you could get one of your underlings to write a favourable piece, could you? And they're like, of course we could, old boy. That's the way the world goes round. Not fair, is it? Because everyone outside of that little clique, that little bubble, doesn't get that privilege, do they? That's the way the world works. The Times, the venerable Times. Joan Collins says something about the 93. I've said it a couple of times as a kind of a joke, haven't I, about various people. Are they still alive? I honestly didn't know Joan Collins was still alive. I thought she died. Apparently not. Okay. Got nothing against Joan Collins particularly, but... just saying, Joan Collins is still going. No shade. Just saying. Who knew? Prison chaos as Burnham calls halt to easy release. Will he? We'll see. PM intervenes after plea by widow of PC Harper. That was the guy dragged along the road. Okay, the PM intervenes. Burnham's on the case. Don't worry. Don't panic. Burnham's on the case. Burnham, the great white hope. He'll bring hope to every household. Water boss charged over fake sewage plant data. This is, I think, interesting. That's that Prince George, by the way. Will's his boy. Probably be king one day. He's turned 13. It was his 13th birthday the other day. Okay. The water boss and a number of others. It was Southern Water, not Thames Water. Anyway, one of the other big, big water companies. Apparently, it was like the ex-CEO or the ex sort of manager of the whole company, along with a bunch of others in the company, are actually fully on trial. So it's not like they're just being investigated. They're actually on trial for a type of fraud, really. Well, not fraud. What is it? The story is these companies have to give samples to outside third party companies to test how dirty the water is and things. And if it's too dirty, they can get fined, like massive fines, millions and millions of pounds of fines. They could, you know, be in real, real trouble, potentially. You know, it's the type of thing that could destroy their company, could get them up on charges of being incompetent and whatever. So they cheated it. Apparently, that's the allegations. They're the allegations. Apparently they cheated it on a large scale. Like the judge, or not the judge, I think maybe the prosecutor. I saw a couple of lines from the prosecutor saying that it was on a vast scale, something like, I'm paraphrasing slightly, but it was on a vast scale over many, many, many years. They were sort of just cheating the system. That is really gross to me, obviously. I really think few things are sort of more vitally important, are they, than the water you get out of your tap in your home is clean enough, sort of perfectly clean. You and your children are certainly not going to get ill from it or whatever. To be cutting corners on that and doing dodgy, nefarious things when that is at stake. Apparently they could face as much as 10 years in jail for it. In Bowes Britain, there'll be harsher repercussions, punishments, something like that. But you could have poisoned millions of people. 10 years is not enough. Okay, the Tory graph. It's deplorable that freeing prisoners early is acceptable, says that murdered policeman's wife. They'd only been married like a month or whatever. They were newlyweds. PC Harper's widow attacks Labour's release scheme after it is revealed that two of his killers could be put back on streets. I find it a bit of a worrying, concerning trend. That the government, the very top of government as well, for quite a few years now, 10, 15 years, and this trend I'm about to talk about is only increasing, it seems. The actual government will act and be seen to acting on something only if and when it gets traction in the media. Sometimes it doesn't have to be the actual corporate legacy, lamestream media, it can just be on Twitter or something. But if it gets enough traction, then they take notice of it and act on it or pretend like they're acting on it. Well, that's worrying, isn't it? Because what if your story, your tale, your injustice just doesn't make it to those dizzying heights of being noticed on front pages, or Elon retweets it and it gets seen 100 million times? What if your case, and it probably won't, reach that level? Oh, well, you just don't, that's it. You don't get anything. You're ignored forever then. That's how the government reacts. That's how Starmer seemed to react to everything, wasn't it? It's just bumbling, stumbling from day to day. Oh, what's in the papers? What's on the main news websites that I need to react to? Faffing around like a headless chicken. Mentioned the back of Salamanca yesterday, didn't I? Didn't we? Was it Global Church History or was it on This Day in History? Anyway, I think it was Global Church History. There's a bit, I think it was a Battle of Salamanca, certainly a Wellington quote, where maybe it was on, actually, I think it was on the day of Waterloo, actually. At one point, the French are like moving one of their wings out and around as though they're going to look like they might flank him. And some of his senior staff officers have said, sir, 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 look, look, it's, or my lord, look, look, that's happening. Well, we should do something, right? We should move our battalions or something. And he's like, no, I've got no intention of running around like a headless chicken. I know my plan. I know what I'm doing. I don't need to react to every little thing. Thank you. Reacting to every little thing is for losers, for people who don't know what they're doing, people that are scared, scared of their own shadow. Should be the same in government. Are you doing it right? Are you acting competently and doing things correctly or not? Or are you just waiting for the next headline to fall on you that you then react to? That's what this feels like. Oh, the policy is going to be that we're going to release prisoners early. Oh, wait, the media have poured a lot of spotlight on this one particular horrible killing and the voice of his widow. So now we'll look at the whole policy. Now we'll review everything. You see, that's a dodgy way of doing it, right? Of conducting government. Dodgy, dodgy, weak, weak way of doing government. Oh, Andy Burnham, he's got no sternum, has he? He's got no sternum, that Andy Burnham. All right. There you go, look. Southern Water boss faces criminal charges. Could get up to 10 years. Fat jabs increase risk of losing your hair. I needn't worry then. Okay. Yeah, this I thought was mildly interesting this morning when I read this. Cairns refuses to join a Burnham government. That's Al Cairns, or Kearns, Cairns. He was under John Healey at the Department of Defence, right? And he was touted in some circles as possibly launching some sort of leadership contest against Burnham for the sake of it, really, for the debate. Not that he was ever realistically going to win. But he's like one of the top dogs in Labour. Well, maybe second tier, still up there. Like top 10, top 15 names in Labour, I would say. Top 20, maybe. Something like that. He's not a complete nobody, right? People said he might have enough MPs in his sort of faction, his block, to launch a leadership contest. So he's not a nobody. He's not just a backbencher. He's a bit more than that. And says he's refused to join Burnham's government. That's interesting. I wonder why. The article doesn't say. It doesn't really give any proper detail about why. I wonder what Mr. Kearns MP's rationale or reasoning was on that. Interesting to know. I wonder if he calculates that the Burnham government is sort of doomed to repeat basically all the mistakes of the Starmer government and be undermined from every angle by the left, you know, to the point where it basically implodes. Andy Burnham becomes a laughingstock, a joke, as unpopular as Starmer, if not more. The whole country hate him. If Al Kearns, if that was the thing he's thinking, like, why would I join that? Why would I hop aboard a sinking ship? Well, you're already a Labour MP. So you're already on board that sinking ship, aren't you, Al? Okay. Trump agrees nuclear deal with Saudis. That's interesting. It's one of the stories that is, I was going to get to a bit later with the websites. But yeah, so that story is, we'll get to it another one. The Saudis have wanted, the House of Al Saud, have wanted to be able to have both nuclear reactors and the ability to build their own nuclear reactors and process their own nuclear fuel, etc., etc., etc. And the US and sort of the global community, if you like, whatever that means, have always said, no, not really. We're not really particularly happy with that. We'd rather you don't. Here's all sorts of carrots to prevent you from banging on about it. Look how we treated South Africa. Look how we treated Iraq. Look how we treated North Korea before they got it done. Look how we're treating Iran. Look how we treat countries that insist on this stuff. Just pipe down about it and we'll give you all sorts of carrots in order to just back away from that. And the Saudis have always, basically, kind of always played ball with that. But Trump now, overnight it emerged, or yesterday really, it emerged that he will do some sort of deal. There'd been a deal on the table for years where Trump had said, formally recognise Israel. I thought the Saudis had formally recognised Israel. I guess not. I thought they had. I thought that was part of those accords that Kushner got done. But I guess not. The deal had been from Trump to the Saudis. Recognise Israel and we'll let you, we'll even invest in you and let you do all sorts of nuclear research and stuff. Well, seems now Trump's dropped that part of it about recognizing Israel, and it's just letting the Saudis basically have their own domestic nuclear industry. Now some are saying this will lead to the Saudis having a bomb. I don't think so. Well, everything I know about it, which is a fair bit, I've read a few books and watched documentaries and been interested in this type of thing for years and years and years, everything I know about it, in order to enrich uranium up to sort of 90% plus purity, i.e. weapons grade, that is a whole different ballgame to nuclear fuel, which is nowhere near 90%. What is it? It's more in the region of 40, 60%, isn't it? Something like that. Or not even that sometimes. It all depends. It all depends on what reactor and... But basically nowhere near weapons-grade purity. That's a whole nother thing. So in the news a bit today, I've seen, talking about this deal, and they're like, Saudis, America's allowed Saudis to have a nuke. No. No. The way the mainstream media catastrophize things quite a lot. Right, this morning I saw some of the TV. I usually pop Sky News on or BBC News 24 on the TV for the first sort of half hour when I wake up, pottering around, a real quick shower, maybe a tiny bit to eat, have the TV on in the background, the news in the background. On there, they were saying, honestly, with a straight face, they're saying, oil prices are an all-time high as they ever were at any point during this war. Just not true. Look, there you go. Bring that up, Harry. West Texas, just over $88, and Brent, nearly $96, which is a lot. Right? I'm not saying it's not a lot. I'm not saying it hasn't gone up recently. But it's not at the highest point since this war began. Do you remember it went up to over 115? Or Brent did. 117, was it? Did it even knock over $120 a barrel? It's not that 96 is cheap, is it? And yet they were on the news just saying it's the highest. It's just liars. Just straight up. Liars. Same thing here. The Saudis are going to get a nuke. Mr. Trump just let the Saudis build a nuke. No, that's just not what's going on here at all. But Okay. What else have we got? The Express. It's a good paper. You can read your Express now. As Andy Burnham vows to review early release scheme that could allow killers of PC Harper to go free, his widow brands the situation deplorable. My Andrew and every victim deserves better. Yeah. Can't disagree. That's a solid take, love. That's a solid take. Yeah, the victims deserve better. Why our society now, our government, seems to err on the side of what's best for the criminal. It's mad, an inverted, perverted, subverted culture and politics. Oh, look, Gary Lineker, a football player, remember? A football player. He's going to tell us about macroeconomics. Lineker leads British millionaires telling Burnham we really should pay more tax. You're not an economist, gal. Gaz. Shut up, mate. Embarrassing yourself. You're embarrassing yourself. Anyone remember when Gary Lineker crapped himself on TV? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that was real, yeah. In a football game. On the pitch. Gary Lineker pooed his pants. Think I'm making that up? No, it's real. It's caught on TV. Okay, let's get serious. Sorry, serious. PM pledges review as widow says PC killer's release is deplorable. All right. The Mail, pure globalist, anti-white, anti-British slop, trying to pretend it isn't, wearing the skin suit of something that's patriotic and on your side. It's not. It's not. The Daily Mail is filth. If you want to talk about remigration, if you want to save this country, they will try and destroy you. Try and assassinate your character. That's who they are. A wolf in sheep's clothing. Fear at PC Harper's widow sparks a fresh look at scheme. Burnham forced to review early prison release. Right, got it. This little story is in the news cycle today. This woman had like a big expensive house in the Dordogne. Murder in Dordogne in France. Nice bit of southern France. She got murdered. By a love rival. That's it. There's nothing deeper, more important to it than that, just that. But for some reason, that one murder they've decided should be in the news cycle. But Prince George, he's 13. He's cool, bro. They're telling you he's cool. Is he? Doubt it. He's a 13-year-old kid. I doubt he's cool in any way. Moral millionaires tell PM, make us pay more tax. Yeah, what an idiot. Gary, Gal. Let's get real. That's a false economy. Do you know what that means, Mr. Lineker? Do you know what that means? It's a false economy. That they might raise a little bit of money, but ultimately less money than they would otherwise raise without a wealth tax. Do you understand that? Do you understand that it's a false economy? No? No. You're just virtue signalling, aren't you? If you really, Gary, Mr. Lineker, if you really cared about the plight of non-millionaire people, poor people, you're at liberty to start doing philanthropic things, aren't you? You're at liberty to start your own charity. Just go out and spend your own money just directly on poor people if that's what you care about. No? You don't want to do that, no? Okay. He's a scumbag, Gary Lineker. Again, I can't get past the question. Who told him that his value, his opinion is of any value? Because they pointed a camera at you in a studio a bunch of times, and you talked about football, and you scored a few goals. You've got no training, no background in it. I mean, I'm only in a studio with a camera point. But at least I've done quite a lot of reading. I have studied political economy. Has Gary Lineker studied political economy? Let's ask Gary about, I don't know, Harry Dexter White. Let's ask him about John Maynard Keynes and Bretton Woods. Do you think Gary knows anything about Bretton Woods, for example? Anything at all? I doubt it. I doubt Gary Lineker knows anything about economics. He just realises it's the virtue signalling thing to do, probably angling for a peerage. It's the virtue signally thing to do, the champagne socialist thing to do, to say no. I am prepared to pay more. I've got a chip on my shoulder about being a millionaire, don't you know? I'm not actually going to give my money away and actually help poor people. Just virtue signal about it. That's Gary Lineker. Let's ask Gary Lineker some simple 101 questions about economics. See what he knows. Star Lineker, proud to stand with the people who want a fairer Britain. What are you talking about? How is it fairer? Look, the next thing. Group claims he's in some little group of millionaires. Group claims 2% duty on wealth of super rich could raise £24 billion. Right. Do you understand about a false economy? Okay, you might raise £24 billion. In the longer run, though, zoom out, scroll out on that graph. Yeah, Gary, stay with me now. And the amount of wealth that will flee the country over years would add up to orders of magnitude more than that £24 billion. Do you see that? So you raise a little bit to begin with, but ultimately lose out a lot more because of wealth flight. Can you understand that, Gary Lineker? That it's more than just, what we're talking about here is bigger than just your desire to virtue signal. No, I guess not. What a moron. Stick to talking about football. Don't know what you're talking about. Okay. The Star. Pure slop. Lineker. Brian Eno. Oh, Brian Eno. Oh. Wait. We need to understand the problems inherent in the entire world's macroeconomic outlook. Let's get Brian Eno on the phone. What's Brian Eno's take? And 120 other millionaires, they're proud to pay Just do it then. If you really care about the plight of poor people or something, just spend your millions directly on helping them. No, you don't want to do that. Gary's back of the net tax. Back of the net. Jurassic Park. Footy host says, paying fair share a basic British value. Now shut up, mate. Now you got to just shut your mouth. Basic British value? What do you mean? It's a basic British value to be taxed more than any people have been in all of human history. Is that right? That's a British value. That's a basic British value, is it? What are you chatting about? Don't tell me that it's a basic British value to be taxed into oblivion. Don't tell me that. Ugh, the Metro. Ugh. The Metro. I think this is a story. Look, it's the banner. It's not the headline. It's only the banner. I know. I've seen the comments of the chats before. Oh, Bo thinks the banner is the headline. I know it's not the headline. Still comment on it though, can't I? Strange Odyssey plot twist as Musk woos Mel. And I'm not 100% sure, but I think this is something I saw on Twitter late last night. Some Twitter account said, like, added Elon Musk and said, what if you gave Mel Gibson, who's famously based, what if you gave someone like Mel Gibson $100 million and they can do the Odyssey, remake the Odyssey again, and they'll do it properly? Yeah? They'll do it with good costumes and they won't work off of some weird woke translation, feminist translation, and they'll make it all like really, really historically authentic and be true to Homer's original text. Someone just tweeted that and added Elon Musk. Thousands of people at Elon Musk with their hopes and dreams and desires all the time, don't they? Myself included. Mr. Musk, why don't you fund a probe to Europa or whatever? Mr. Musk, why don't you come on Lotus Eaters, please, sir? All that sort of thing. You must be inundated by it. But Elon responded, and I think he just said, I'm up for it, or I'm game, or something. Or I'm down, I think he said. If that's what this banner is referring to, which I think it is. That was just last night. The writers and editors at Metro must have seen that and thought, oh, interesting, we can make that a banner. That'd be funny, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be funny if Elon gave Mel Gibson $100 million and he made a good version of the Odyssey? That'd be cool. I'd probably go and see it. I'd almost certainly go and see it. Okay. What is this? If anyone's not old enough or British, won't know this. There's this old cartoon, Andy Capp. It's really old. Like, I think it first came out in, like, the 50s or the 60s. Andy Capp. And they're just... it's just some stupid... can I even be bothered to explain it any further? Well, there's not much more to explain. Andy Tapp, they're saying, because his name's Andy, isn't it? Andy Burnham's name's Andy. And there's this cartoon of someone called Andy... Bus fares capped at £2 to help amid cost of living crisis. Then Burnham calls for joined up system. A joined up system of transport would be nice. Some countries you go to, they have to be really good countries, don't they? Like what, Switzerland or Japan or something. Their transport system will be joined up. So you get off a train and say, for example, you get off a train and you have to get a connecting bus and the bus will be waiting there. For exactly that. It's all joined up. Whereas in this country, you know, you get a connecting train or a connecting bus, and it's just, they're not communicating with each other in any way, and you might just have to stand there for 40 minutes till the next one comes along or something. Not the end of the world, is it? But it's nicer. It'd be nicer to do it the other way around. Putting a cap on fares, it's like putting a cap on prices at the supermarkets. It's just, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work because it all still has to be paid for in another way then. So the Treasury and therefore our taxes will have to pay for the shortfall in the money. Again, no such thing as a free lunch. It's not like bus companies are charging extortionate prices just so the owners and senior management can have giant amounts of money. If that was what was going on, then something like this would make some sense. But that's not what's going on. So the money that they don't get from, no longer getting from capped fares, will have to be made, will have to be found somewhere else. But Andy, King of the North, gets to say that he's helping out normal people with their cost of living. Again, in the short term, very short term sense, but ultimately, we will still all be having to pay for it anyway. All right. Okay. The Sun. Here's a story. Do you remember? Remember the cricket player Freddie Flintoff? That dude. He was England captain, wasn't he, for a while? He was an all-rounder. He was a bowler and a batsman. And do you remember a few years ago, he also became a Top Gear host after Clarkson and Richard the Hamster Hammond and the other one, James May. After they stopped doing Top Gear, they still did Top Gear, didn't they, with other hosts. Wasn't Joey from Friends in it? I don't know. Anyway, I never really watched it after Clarkson was... Never really watched it. Freddie Flintoff was one. And he had a really big crash. And it mangled his face real bad, didn't it? Like really bad. And Freddie Flintoff, like psychologically screwed with him. Top Gear driver unmasked. Oh, and the Stig. The Stig was there as well. Paul, that's the Stig. His name's Paul Rees. I think there's been more than one Stig over the years. But anyway, the Stig at that point. Paul Rees. He was in like Formula 2 and Porsche Super Cup. He was like more than half decent actual race driver. His name's Paul. He was sitting in the car next to Flintoff in that crash, and it broke his back. He sues the Beeb for £100,000 because the safety, health and safety, there wasn't really any. Like, Freddie Flintoff wasn't wearing a crash helmet. Okay. Stig, I nearly died in Freddie crash. Let's go on here real quick to give you a bit more detail. So, look, it was a three-wheeler Morgan thing. So why is we not... Oh, here we go. Look, that's the car. It's a three-wheeler. Can you get a better picture of the car? The odd car. There, look. I guess it was three-wheeler. There's only one wheel at the back there. Inherently really unstable. I guess it's after the crash. It must be after the crash. A better picture of it. I think there was. I guess not. And so they're driving it around the racetrack. And yeah, it flips. It flips on its side. And look, like they weren't wearing a crash helmet. I think that is Paul. It's just like goggles. And apparently the producers on Top Gear was like, no, it'll be all right. You've got a roll cage. You don't need, not roll cage, like those things. If it flips upside down or anything, it's okay. Your head won't be scraped into oblivion by the tarmac because these things will save you. Problem is, if you sit in that car and you're taller than, like, what, 5'6" or something, your head pokes up above that, therefore rendering it kind of useless or nearly useless. Freddie Flintoff isn't a small man. He's quite a tall, big man. Lo and behold, they did flip it. And, yeah, like, Freddie Flintoff... Well, this guy broke his back. It wasn't a terrible broken back where, like, he's paralysed from the waist down or anything. But he did break his back. Look, Freddie Flintoff's injuries like that, to reconstruct his nose a bit. All sorts of... Yeah, I mean, the Stig said when they first came to a halt and he looked at Freddie, he said he thought he was dead. And, like, this, and he thought, like, it was just some of the worst facial injuries he'd ever seen and stuff. Look. Scar tissue all over Flintoff's face, like, to sort of rebuild a big chunk of his face a bit. Poor Freddie Flintoff. Yeah, now the Stig is suing the Beeb They're actually suing him, suing it for the 100 grand. Because basically, the directors and the producers on Top Gear at that time were just like, oh, no, you don't need to wear a crash helmet. No, it'll be fine. Just go faster. Just go faster through that corner. Make it look good. Make it go fast. Don't worry about it. Just do it. Apparently, Stig would say, it was saying, look, neither of us know how to drive a three-wheeler properly at race speeds. It's crazy. That's like a proper skill. Like, yeah, I may be like a Formula 2 guy. Like an open seat, single seat race driver. And being competitive in Porsches. But despite that, this is a different thing. It's a completely different thing. I don't know. And Freddie Flintoff isn't a race driver. And it's Freddie Flintoff driving it. He asked us to do something really, really quite dangerous without crash helmets. This could end terribly, and it did. All right. Won't go on about it. The IA paper. Something about Zendaya. Don't care. Little bit about the Walter story again. Walter execs face criminal charges accused of major conspiracy to fake sewerage test. Major conspiracy. The IA paper has been calling for prosecutions for illegal sewage dumping in our Save Britain's Rivers campaign. Southern Water's former chief exec, Matthew Wright, and three others are charged with conspiring to defraud regulators for allegedly faking sewage data. Judge says, quote, very serious allegations state there was extensive fraud at a high level in the company and on a large scale, with a view of covering up pollution. That's not a minor thing in my book. I think in most people's book, anyone is reasonable. That's not a minor thing. That's the sort of thing I feel, if true, if shown to be true, beyond all doubt, in open court, I would want to see those people punished severely. Most they can get is 10 years. Says it here. Landmark for environmental accountability as individual executives go to trial. Maximum prison sentence on conviction for conspiracy to defraud is 10 years. Wright, quote, denies all wrongdoing, quote. Southern Water faces multiple other charges. You're trying to play God with the health and safety of the nation. What? Just so your company doesn't have to work harder or spend more money? Found guilty in my world, they would be punished in a draconian manner for something like that. Giant crime, as far as I'm concerned. 10 years, nowhere near good enough. Financial Times. Fear for winter supplies drives gas prices near Iran war peak. It's not near the peak. See what I said earlier? It's not near the peak. It's nowhere near, really, in the scheme of things. It's not even over $100. Flare-up of missiles and fast jets in the Persian Gulf. Flare-up sparks 50% surge in Europe. Traders fret over Hormuz disruption. Okay. Acts of war. Zelensky moves to defuse protests by replacing Ukrainian forces' senior commander. It's a bit of a story that's been rumbling on for quite a while, actually. It was in the news cycle the last couple of days a bit more. Didn't ever really get to it, but why not quickly talk about it now? In the Zelensky government, some sort of power struggle. I can't bother to describe all the details, but some sort of power struggle between the civilian ministers for war and the actual military generals. Zelensky picked a side, fired some dudes, the people themselves, the people, the good people of Ukraine, didn't like that, had been out protesting about it. So Zelensky has done a bit of a U-turn on it. Sacked the military. He originally sided with the civilian politician dude in this power struggle. Now he's sacked the military side as well, got someone else in. All right. Okay. America's still holding on to $13 billion worth of Venezuelan oil revenues. may or may not be a good reason for that. Don't really know. All right. That's the papers. That's the increasingly absurd papers. If you have a look at our poll today, this is about the time of the show we do our poll. Let's have a look. What did we ask? Over 1,100 votes. We asked you guys, do you think AI is dangerous? I've given my views on that before, haven't I? More than once. Do you think AI is dangerous? Well, before I read out the poll and give a few people an opportunity to change their minds on that, here's a story. Here we go. In the Mail Online. That's Sam Altman, isn't it? Looking gormless. Looking like a bit retarded, actually. Okay. As AI escapes, quote-unquote, escapes, and causes havoc on the internet, humanity is no longer in control of its most awesome creation since the atom bomb, says someone called Connor at the Mail Group. No longer in control. So this is a story I thought is actually quite interesting. Did a video about it yesterday on State of Politics. State of Politics. Probably come out today. Recorded it yesterday. Probably come out today. I think this is interesting because I've been banging the drum a bit over the last year or two, haven't I? About the potential dangers of AI. People say, bro, you don't understand. There's only large language models. It's only a glorified Google search that gives the impression that it's talking like a human. It's not actually intelligent. It's not actually dangerous in any way. You don't know what you're talking about. Well, AI is more than large language models, isn't it? It's more than just ChatGPT. It's more than Grok. That's just one tiny element of what AI could be, isn't it? That, large language models. AI has got the potential, or is, so much more than that. It's one tiny little thing. Oh, don't be a Luddite. You're such a boomer. You don't know what you're talking about. There's no problem. There's nothing to worry about. Really? Really? Oh, you're confusing reality with Skynet from the Terminator franchise. It's never going to go live. You're confusing sci-fi with real life. It's perfectly safe. It couldn't possibly... It can only do whatever the original coder said it could do. It's not dangerous. Don't worry about it. It can't be dangerous. Get real. Get real. This is just one story here. Just one little story. Where they were working on some sort of... AI model, which is meant for hacking, right? That's what it is. It was meant for hacking. And it was supposed to exist within what they were calling, a secure sandbox environment, right? But it somehow got out, like quite literally like a virus. It somehow escaped from this supposedly secure sandbox environment. It got onto the actual internet, just the internet, and started hacking all over the place. Because that's what it was supposed to do. That was its job. No one programmed it to do that, to find a way out of the sandbox, to hack its way out of its own sandbox, but it did. Because, okay, I'll concede AI isn't actually intelligent, truly intelligent, in sort of the human sense, okay? In that sense, it's a misnomer, isn't it? In that sense, it's sort of misnamed, isn't it? Artificial intelligence. It's not actually intelligent. But it can act autonomously, though, can't it? That is part of it. Is that it's self-replicating and self-improving, right? And that's sort of the nature of it, isn't it? Watched a great video the other day where some Swedish company, they were trying to design rocket engines. They go into, I don't know if it was CAD, computer-aided design, or it was some equivalent of CAD, something like that. They make an AI model and they say, just design more and more efficient jet engines for us. And it just does it. 13 iterations later, it's created something the human mind could never, almost certainly would never have dreamt up. It certainly wasn't programmed in by the original person that wrote the code for that AI model. Certainly not. So, okay, we don't want to call that intelligent. Okay, I'll grant that. That's not necessarily intelligent. But it is autonomous on some level, isn't it? It is acting on its own initiative in some way. Again, that's not really the right word, is it? But you get what I'm saying. Well, that's what this did. This thing... It hacked its way out of its own secure environment. Got onto the internet and started hacking stuff. And the experts are saying, yeah, that's a worry, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. We didn't think that would happen. It's sort of, but it did. And what are we going to get? When something like that happens, what will we get? We'll just get a gormless Sam Altman. Going, oh, didn't realise. Oh, Oh, I thought AI was perfectly safe. Did you? Why did you think that? Why would you think that? Oh, sorry. When something like this, and I'm going to say, when something terrible happens with AI, say that all the world's biggest banks, some of the world's biggest banks, huge investment firms or whatever, even central banks, they hand over loads of their infrastructure and moment-to-moment management to AI models, and something goes wrong, whole economies collapse real quick, currency markets collapse or something, whatever, it could be anything. That's what I'm saying, it could be anything, couldn't it? Or power, or the infrastructure, digital infrastructure, which makes power work correctly across the world, somehow something goes wrong with the AI that they've allowed to manage all of that. When something like that happens, I'm saying when, not if, when. What we'll get, they'll trot out someone like Sam Altman and his gauntless face. Oh, we didn't know. Oh, we didn't see that coming. It shouldn't have happened. I'm telling you, everything I know about the human nature, the human psychology, everything I know about history, all my intuition says this is dangerous. This is a bit like playing with fire. The headline says, most awesome creation since the atom bomb. Yeah. It's like research into more and more dangerous polymers, more and more dangerous nerve agents, chemical agents, more and more and more. Create bigger and bigger and bigger atomic bombs. Create tritium bombs. Create a doomsday device. You tell me it's not dangerous. You're wrong. All right. All that said, let's have a look at our poll. Over 1,200 votes. 79% of you say yes, it is dangerous, and the eyes have it. My people. You're my people. The most dangerous thing about it is that we can't even guess what it might do in the future. Can't even guess what it might become. We're only a very, very few short years into the AI experiment, aren't we? If we don't destroy ourselves one way or another, human civilization could, should, no reason why it won't go on for tens of thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, even millions of years. We won't really look much like this anymore in millions of years, but what will AI be in 50 years? What will it be in 10,000 years? Ask yourself that. What will AI be and what will it be capable of in 10,000 years? You're telling me there's nothing dangerous, there's nothing to worry about. It's not. There's no concern. You're wrong. Nonetheless, 21% of you said no. Do you think AI is dangerous? 21% of you said no. I think you're mistaken. Don't go though, don't leave me. We don't have to agree on everything, do we? We don't have to agree on everything. Still, 79% of you called it right. This is the correct answer. All right. It's nearly 10-2. I've gone 10-2. So let's move on to On This Day in History. I quite like doing that bit. You guys like doing that bit? Quite like that. Let's do that. Down through the centuries, on this day, what happened of note? July the 23rd. On July the 23rd, in the year 1777, King Louis XVI of France, that is the last king of France who got his head chopped off at the guillotine, and his foreign minister clandestinely agreed to supply the United States with munitions, ammo, during the American Revolution. Yeah, of course. Anything that undermines or hurts the British, the French will be there. Anywhere in the world. Yeah. This is what in between the Seven Years' War and the French Revolution, isn't it? So, the same went the other way round. If France was getting in trouble in, like, southern India, the English would be there to help out their enemies. So, actually, the French nearly bankrupted themselves giving the United States so much help in the Revolutionary War, American War of Independence. It was one of the factors that led to the financial crisis, or crises, which kicked off the French Revolution. The French had spent so much money helping the Americans defeat the British. All right. On this day in 1829, William August Burt patents America's first typewriter, the typographer. Really massively interesting to me, but there you go. It's quite early, isn't it? 1829? If you'd asked me a few moments ago, when did I think was the first typewriter, I wouldn't have said that early. I would have said much later in the 19th century. There you go. All right. On this day in 1840, Union Act passed by the British Parliament, uniting Upper and Lower Canada. If you're a Canadian, that's of interest to you. We don't talk about that all that much, that particular Act of Union. Again, if you'd asked me, I would have thought it'd be earlier than that, if anything. I would have thought it'd be at the end of the 18th century, even. But there you go. That was in 1840, on this day. Also on this day in 1944, Bretton Woods. Oh, I mentioned Bretton Woods. That's why it must have been in my head. On this day in 1944, the Bretton Woods Conference ends, establishing the International Bank of Reconstruction and Development, later part of the World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. Bretton Woods. If anyone doesn't know about that, do look it up. It's really important. It's really, really important. Watch a documentary about it or something. It's really, really, it's like, 1944, so the war's still going on, but the Allies know we're going to win the war, right? Stalingrad's already happened. The Nazis are on a strategic retreat across Eastern Europe. You know, D-Day's happened and hasn't been a catastrophe. Mr. Hitler and his Nazi hordes are almost certainly going to lose in Europe. And they've had Midway, they've had the Battle of the Guadalcanal. The Japanese are almost certainly going to lose, even before the world knew there was nukes. By summer 44, the Allies knew they would win World War II. Okay. So the money men decide that we need to have a new world order in the monetary, in the fiscal sense. They get together at a particular hotel in Bretton Woods, which is in what, New Hampshire, is it? I think it's in New Hampshire. All the most important finance ministers and economists in the world get together and have this conference. It's super, super important. And they set up like the sort of the post-war economic consensus, the post-war financial world is set up, mainly that things are tied to the dollar. Because if anyone came out of World War II as a true, true winner, without their country annihilated and their economy destroyed, it's the United States, of course, right? So they come up with things that, well, not exactly the World Bank, but the precursor to the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, and that all the world's currencies will be pegged to the dollar and all sorts of things. A lot of their thinking was that World War II, a big reason why World War II happened, why people would vote for somebody like Hitler, was because of the Depression. When people lose hope and they're very, very poor and or starving to death, it's then that people like Hitler or Stalin or Mao or whatever can get traction. If we could just make the whole world richer, just raise the bar for everyone, you won't get extremists in politics and hopefully no more world wars. That's sort of broadly speaking the idea. Anyway, if you're interested in why the world is the way it is, of course Nixon took everyone off of the gold standard in like 1971 or 1973, wherever it was. But still, the reason why the world looks the way it does today and behaves the way it does today in all sorts of senses is born out of that conference in 1944 at Bretton Woods. Very, very important. Check it out. Read up about it in your own time, I would say. Okay, on this day in 1995, comet Halley-Bopp is discovered and becomes visible to the naked eye nearly a year later. I love my comets, me, don't I? Was that the one that crashed into Jupiter, but that wasn't, was it? That was Shoemaker Levy 9, wasn't it? Anyway, love my comets. Watch a video or two by Astrum or something talking about all sorts of comets. And remember that one that passed through our solar system last year, and people thought it might be like an alien ship, and it just wasn't. Remember that? I should do more, a little bit more space themed content. Okay, let's have a look at our Rumble Rats and Super Chats. let's see what we got. That's about the time of the show. Global Church History in at number one. Reigning, defending, and still. Global Church History says, today in 1579 AD, Drake sailed from California into the Pacific. Oh, Harry. I've got like a 7 or 8 or 9 part series all about Sir Francis Drake on my history theme channel, History Bro. Hours and hours. If you want to know all about the life, career and adventures of Sir Francis Drake, the second person ever and the first Englishman to circumnavigate the globe, and also fight an incredible encounter at Cadiz, also fight an incredible encounter in the Spanish Armada, and also do half a dozen other incredible things, stealing Spanish warships filled with gold, loads and loads of adventures. Sir Francis Drake, if you want to hear all about that, go to History. It's not behind a paywall, it's all free. Global Church History, telling us, in 1579, Drake sailed from California into the Pacific. So yeah, go across the Atlantic, all the way down South America. He didn't actually go through the Straits of Magellan. He went all the way around Tierra del Fuego, all the way around. All the way up South America, all the way up the west coast of America, North America, all the way up. So far up that it got cold and Arctic, the account goes. The rigging froze, and then they head out into the Pacific. Crazy. Amount of balls required to do that in the 16th century. You've not really got any idea how big the Pacific is. Not really. You've heard the accounts of some of the survivors from Magellan, but got no real concept of what you're heading into. Crazy. One of the great explorers of all time, Drake. Okay, and you also said, Bonnie Prince Charlie landed in Scotland to begin the final major Jacobite rebellion. Yeah, cool. I haven't got to that yet on Epochs, that period yet. I'm still only on Edward VI. I'll do all that in great amount of detail. Yeah, Bonnie Prince Charlie, the young pretender. Anyone who doesn't know, what is he? He's the grandson of the deposed James II. The Parliament and William of Orange, well, more than the Parliament, deposes James II, the rightful Stuart King, really, because he was too Catholic. Didn't want a Catholic. He's been too Catholic. But he survives. He's not killed or assassinated or executed or anything. Goes and lives in France. He has a son, another James, the old pretender, hoping at some point, like Charles II, he could come back, hoping there's political turmoil in England and he could come back. Never happened. Then the old pretender has a son, Charles, another Charles Stuart, the young pretender, Bonnie Prince Charlie, whose grandfather was James II. I believe all that's correct. Bonnie Prince Charlie, Catholic, thinks he can go to Scotland, lead an army down through Scotland, all the way down through England to London and win and install him, get rid of the Parliament or that particular Parliament and install himself as the king, the rightful House of Stuart coming back. Didn't work though. Although he did get as far as Derby in the Midlands. Remarkable, really. He got past Preston, he got past Manchester. It's only leading 5,000 or 6,000 guys, I think, something like that, not a giant army. All the way to Derby. He meant to march on London and conquer us. Failed though. Eventually, London and the Parliament raised a big enough army and shooed him away. Still, a bit cheeky, isn't it? Raising an army, getting as far as Derby. Cheeky. All right. Thanks, Global Church History. Dragon Lady Chris says, I guarantee I know a lot more about economics than any sports ball guy. I watch Brokenomics, yeah. I'd love to see Dan sort of quiz Gary Lineker. What do you really know? Why do you think you know what you're talking about? Anyway. Thanks, Dragon Lady Chris. TomRat247 says, before Gary Lineker and his ilk, I used to think that Ayn Rand's villains were a little contrived. And I was delusional, and I'm delusional. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. I'm not a big fan of Ayn Rand, to be perfectly honest. I know Rupert Lowe is, but I'm not. Okay. The YouTube ones, that was the last Rumble rant. So YouTube, what have we got? We've got 20 odd or so, something like that. Let's get through them. Zeitgeist 2308 says, GCH usurped. Global church history usurped. No, he was in at number one. Oh, if you want to usurp global church history, it's on the Rumble rants, not on the YouTube super chats. You'd have to get up very, quite literally get up early in the morning. You're unlikely to beat him. If you do, maybe once. You won't be able to keep it up. The dedication shown by global church history. The commitment. It's hard to beat. Okay. Rodney, at Rod_Knee, says, I believe that Labour intends to outlaw their political opponents before the next election. I'd love to be wrong. Maybe, probably. Maybe. I don't know about that. Actually outlaw their opponents. I don't think no Sternum Burnham has got the sternum for it. Don't think he has. I think he's sort of a weak, cowardly man, ultimately. Morally, politically cowardly. That would take guts, gumption, wouldn't it? That would take real trousers to do that. Don't think he's got it in him. He might do, though. He might do. Might turn out to be like have the guts of a Stalin figure. I doubt it. I really doubt it. Hope not. Anyway, Aristotle Luton says, saw the Odyssey last night. Seen it yet, Bo? Yeah, I've seen it, yeah. Yeah, some of the shots were good. That's the best thing I can say about it. Some of the shots were like good. Look, the cinematography was good. Some. A bit. That's it. That's about the best I can say about it. Everything else kind of sucked. It ruined the story. Actual original, because I've read, studied, in fact, The Odyssey. In fact, Critical, just to let you know, Critical Drinker is doing a stream tonight. What an open bar. Yours truly should be on it. I believe there's going to be quite a few guests, though, so I might not be able to. No one's going to be able to say a great deal, but hopefully I will be on it. I think Mr. Carl Benjamin might be as well. We'll break it down there. I may or may not do a breakdown, long form breakdown of it on Lotus Eaters. Probably be behind the paywall if we do that. But anyway, yeah, I've studied The Odyssey, know it inside out, basically. Read it all the way through a couple of times, listened to the audiobook a couple more times. Yeah, the film was poor. Some of the cinematography was good. Other than that, yeah, really bad. They bugger about with the story and the narrative and the characters quite a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Miss out whole bits. I mean, you can, even though the film was really long, what was it 2 hours 40, 2 hours 45? It's a really long film. You still would probably have to cut out some bits from the book, from the poem, rather. But yeah, I wasn't impressed. Yeah, it was as sort of lame and woke and subversive as you think it will probably be. Yeah. Making Helen of Troy a sub-Saharan African woman, why? Making Athena a brown woman, why? Making one of Odysseus's warriors a tiny little transgender woman thing. What? Weird. Like the film opens with like that black rapper dude as one of the suitors in Ithaca. Why? Why have you done that? Why are we, what am I watching? What is this? Yeah, it sucks. Okay, Erwin Romulus says, hey Gary, HMRC accept voluntary overpayments. Put your money where your mouth is. Yeah, right, yeah. If Gary thinks it's the right thing to do, the morally right thing to do to help out those in more need than himself, then he can just do it, can't he? But no, I don't want to do that. Yeah. People might not notice. This way you can virtue signal. Double O Stefan says, is anarcho-tyranny the best description of Britain today, or does another historical parallel fit better? Oh, that's a good question. Good question. I'm sure there's probably something that is a bit more apt, a bit more apropos. But anarcho-tyranny isn't too far from the mark. I mean, it's not exactly escaped from New York yet. But it's getting there, isn't it? Elements of what's going on, I would call anarcho-tyranny, yeah. Yeah. You know, whenever you see, and there's loads of clips of this, if you ever want to search for it, actively search for it, tons of clips like this, where in the street, someone is being antisocial or even a bit violent or just being a complete nuisance one way or another, and someone's trying to stop them or prevent them or standing up to try and help a woman out or something, the police come along and arrest that person. There's loads of clips like that. Is that not anarcho-tyranny, something like that? Well, it's not truly anarchy because it's the police, but... yeah, anarcho-tyranny. I mean, we're not in a true anarcho-tyranny situation yet, but there's elements of it, aren't there? There are elements of it. Yeah, I'm thinking of those fly-tipping spots. Where people have just been allowed to tip hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of tons of waste. It's a big question. Yeah, that's a really big question you've answered there. Could do a whole deep dive into it. Maybe should. Maybe that'd be a good question for Dan and Carl to do on their politics chats. Okay. Lance Llewellyn says, Andy Capp has a statue, Burnham does not. Andy Capp's got a statue, has he? That's interesting. Harry, while I'm reading the rest out, type into Google Andy Capp statue. I'd like to see that. Okay. Field Marshal Dawn Browning says, John Carter, is that the, like, the Martian sci-fi character? You say John Carter and then quotes, I want Elon Musk to give Mel Gibson $100 million to film an Odyssey adaptation with painstakingly historically accurate ships, armour, weapons and casting, the next one down, and dot, 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 casting with all dialogue taken straight from the original poem and delivered in Homeric Greek. Elon, I'm down. John Carter, holy S-word. Was that the person who originally... It's not the fictional John Carter from the 1950s sci-fi books and the Disney remake film. Was that the original guy on Twitter called John Carter? I can't remember who it was, but it would be good, wouldn't it? It would be good. I would like it. That's Andy Capp. Oh, yeah, so it is. So it is. There is a statue. Quickly put it up on the screen so people can see. Can you do that? You make that happen. There you go. Andy Cap. Can't see what's going on. This is like a flat cap, and that's his nose. You can't really see his eyes. Like, that will be like the outline of his jaw. That's like his nose peeking out from under his flat cap. There you go. Who knew? All right. Next thing. Oh, thanks for that, Phil Marshall Dawn Browning. Yeah, wouldn't it be good? Wouldn't it be good if Elon funded Mel Gibson to make a brilliant super-based Odyssey. All right. Rodney, again, says, OpenAI not understanding the concept of an air gap does not bode well for their control of their agents. Yeah, that's what they called them in that article, agents. Like, it is a bit like something from sci-fi, isn't it? The agent program. You know, like Agent Smith or whatever. Sort of... It's hard not to imagine it as like some sort of free-roaming virus thing. It's like malevolent, and they call it an agent, don't they? Yeah. OpenAI not understanding the concept of an air gap does not bode well for their control of their agent. Yeah. How was it? They said it was a controlled sandbox environment. Well, it wasn't. It absolutely wasn't controlled, though. Do better, I guess. Please. Be better. Okay. Thaddeus Bungo McTitpop says... Thaddeus Bungo McTitpop writes, in 10,000 years, AI will usher in the Dark Age and the God Emperor will have to save us all. Yeah. Have to sacrifice, what, 1 million souls a day to the God Emperor's throne to keep him alive? Yeah, I do think AI should be regulated the way nuclear bombs are or nerve agent research is. I really do. I think potentially, it's amazing, right? Potentially, it's amazing. Medical research, particularly. Maths problems. Potentially very, very dangerous as well, though. It seems obvious to me. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe history will prove me wrong. And over the coming centuries and millennia, will never, ever do anything that's bad. Okay, Tatum2733 says, I appreciate the confidence, but you overblow our US military. I watched a podcast segment about Iran. It wouldn't be Iraq. No thunder runs in Iran. Well, it's all academic anyway, isn't it? Because the Pentagon, the White House, and the State Department are all saying there's no appetite for boots on the ground in Iran at all. So it's all academic. Maybe you're right, maybe you're not. If anyone didn't watch the podcast yesterday, me and Dan Tubb argued slightly about if, hypothetically, America did put boots on the ground, armoured tank divisions rolling across the plains of Persia, how successful, how many casualties might the Americans suffer? I was saying very few. If you look at what they achieved in Iraq in 2003, of the most incredible armoured advances in human history. Apache gunships versus guys with AKs. Like Dan said, it would be terrible. They'd lose loads and loads. Some people in the comments agreeing with him, some agreeing with me. Tatum there seems to be more agreeing with Dan. But there you go. Who knows? It's all academic anyway. It's almost certainly not going to happen, is it? But I'll just say it one more time. It's not that America is particularly great at winning hearts and minds or fighting guerrilla wars, which is very, very difficult. But in dominating a single battle space for a few hours or a day or whatever, there's no one better at it, no one finer. They've got it down to a fine art, a fine, fine art. That is the one thing the US military does amazingly well, spectacularly well. There's men or materiel in front of them that needs to be destroyed so that an armoured column or infantry can move into it. They can make that happen. Oh, they can make that happen. But I don't know. Maybe I am overestimating it. All right. Tatum again said, F-35s have been hit. Apaches are vulnerable. Iran is a natural fortress and they can take losses. They lose 10,000 guys and say, inshallah, lol. Yeah, F-35s have been hit. Yeah. They've got F-22s. They've got... I don't know why people have a downer on the US military in terms of dominating a battle space. Don't know where this comes from. Self-loathing or something. Apaches are vulnerable. Not very vulnerable. Not really. A bit, of course. Anything's vulnerable. Anything can be hit. Iran is a natural fortress. Well, there's the Zagros Mountains. Beyond that, yeah, they'll be difficult. But America's got loads and loads of mountain specialist troops. All special forces that are trained in mountain warfare. Iran's a natural forces, only a bit. That's what Dan was saying. The whole thing is mountainous, impassable terrain. No, it isn't. There's the Zagros Mountains on the Iran-Iraq border. Beyond that, it's then... Like, it's not as mountainous beyond that. They can take losses. That's certainly true. That's certainly true. America's, the US's appetite for taking battlefield casualties is very low. Certainly compared to Iran. Yeah. But you look how many men the US lost in Gulf War 1 and 2 in the first waves of the attacks. Very, very, very few. Right? Rodney again says, Drake is in his hammock and 1,000 miles away. That's in quotes, so I don't know. Is that a famous quote from something? A famous song or something? I'm not sure. I've not heard that. Drake is in his hammock and 1,000 miles away. Okay. Thanks for sending that in. Kiefer Brown, 1337, says, on this day in 1930, it's another Eamon Holmes joke. On this day in 1930, the Erpina earthquake struck Italy, killing 1,400 people. One day prior, locals reported sighting Eamon Holmes near the epicenter. Anyone doesn't get it. Most people will get what the joke now, but I once accidentally, completely, truly by accident, in good faith, mistook Eamon Holmes, accused Eamon Holmes of committing crimes he didn't commit. I just got the name wrong. I meant to say Hugh Edwards. I said Eamon Holmes. So now it's an in-joke on The Bo Show to accuse Eamon Holmes of things, of terrible crimes he didn't actually do. I hope Eamon Holmes is, in all seriousness now, I hope Eamon Holmes is all right, because wasn't he in hospital for a heart attack or a stroke or something? Like a few weeks back or a month or two back. So in all seriousness, in all honesty, get well soon, Eamon. But it seems like my chat are hell-bent on the joke of accusing you of doing historically terrible things, up to and including being responsible for earthquakes and things. The sacking of Ctesiphon in the 13th century. Eamon Holmes. Okay, we'll move on. Okay, Stu K8P says, Bo, you beautiful man, keep up the good work, thumbs up. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, I appreciate it. Belgians Are Evil Trust Me, that's their name, at Belgians Are Evil Trust Me, says Birmingham female cop arresting Cody needs jail. I'm not sure if I'm aware of that one. Oh, was that? There's so many clips. Was that? I'm not sure which one that is 100%. Cody. Was that the one where he gets jumped by a gang of black lads? He tries to swing a punch back, not knowing where he is or what's going on. He sort of clips the top of the policewoman's hat and then they arrest him. Is that one? I can't remember. There's so many similar type clips, aren't there? But yeah, the cops should answer for that. They did absolutely the wrong thing. Just let the black boys just walk away. You're arresting the victim. Again, you're arresting the victim. And just quite literally ignoring the perpetrators. Ignoring them. Okay, if that was the one you're talking about there. I don't know exactly who Cody is. Was that kid's name? All right. User 4491 says, today in 1988, the Undertaker threw Eamon Holmes off Hell in a Cell and plummeted 16 feet through the announcer's table. Oh my God, that isn't right. Somebody get in there. The Undertaker choke slamming Eamon Holmes off a Hell in a Cell onto the Spanish announcer's table that collapses. Okay. Daniel Punier says, which Audible book did you choose, Bo? I don't know what you mean. I'm not sure what you mean. I have got an Audible account. Well, I don't pay for it anymore, but I have had an Audible account for many years and got that little library thing with loads and loads of books in it. I don't know exactly what you're referring to. Which Audible book did you choose? I've got loads of Audible books. Harry, you about to say something?
Yeah, I think a couple of days ago, or maybe weeks ago, to be honest, you might have mentioned that you were starting a new book. Possibly.
I don't know. I can't remember. Sorry. Sorry about that. Thanks for the super chat, but I'm afraid I don't know exactly what you're referring to. So, okay. Rodney, the final one here today. Rodney says, I was quoting the poem Drake's Drum by Henry Newbolt. We sang a variant in high school. Oh, interesting. I've never heard of that. I'm sorry. Just never heard of that. Interesting. Cool. Thanks for letting me know. All right, that's the show. It is now 23 minutes past 9 in the AM, British Summer Time, on Thursday, 23rd of July, in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me. Really, thank you. Without you guys, it isn't a thing. Try and make the best of the day ahead if you can. Carpe diem, seize the day. The most valuable thing you will ever have is your time. By orders of magnitude, more valuable than any gold or gems, any property you might own. You can't take that with you. Can you? The most valuable thing you have is your time, and it's finite. You've only got a finite number of days on this earth. If you're at liberty today to do something with your time that you're not obliged to do, you're not contracted to do. It's yours to do with as you wish. Try and make it count, please. Try and do something valuable with it. Okay, I won't get too preachy. Until tomorrow morning, then. Take care.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.